are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Welcome, world. It is the weekend, is it not? And it is always the weekend is a lot of fun. Or it ought to be. And if you don't have some plans for your weekend to be fun, you need to do that right away. And of course, the best way to kick that off is right here on The Kevin Smith Show. And those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. And I think you're going to enjoy what we do here. You need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter, and you can subscribe to it over at my website, kevinsmithshow.com. You'll see a little button there. It's in red letters, and it says K-Files E-Zine. Takes 10 seconds or so to subscribe. And the first batch of those will go out tonight, in fact. And so there is an opportunity right now for you to get in on it. As I said, it's free, no strings attached. I want to remind you that we are putting together a trip, or we're attempting to put together a trip to Thailand so that we can visit some of the really interesting, mystical places in Thailand. And I've got to tell you, I've been there, I've experienced it, and there's just nothing quite like it. It's magical. It just is a unique experience, and I'd love to have you go with us. So if you want to go with me to Thailand, that's going to be in October, and you need to send me an email. Speaking of email, I have to announce this every once in a while because we have new listeners and they don't know. You can send an email to me. The email is host@kevinsmithshow.com. But that's kind of rolling the dice because I have so many spam filters installed. Like you, I just get bombarded with spam. And I wanted to have some way to make sure that if you send me an email that it actually gets in front of my eyes. And so I've built a contact page. Now that contact page is specifically designed to get you past all those spam filters. It will. It works. It will get you past the spam filters. If you use that page, it's a guarantee I'll see your email. All right? Now you don't have to. I mean, some people just don't like using a contact page like that. They just want to use their own email program, and you can. But like I said, it's a crapshoot, and it might get through, it might not. So I just want you to know about that. But the contact page will get you through all of the spam filters. I will see your email. I do read every email that comes to me, and I reply to most of them. Sometimes I run out of time, and I just can't reply to all of them, but I try to reply to each one. And I do appreciate getting your emails, by the way. It's a big part of what makes this fun, getting your emails. I'm going to be talking about an email that I received when we come back from break, and addressing some of the issues raised in that email. We also will have a guest joining us a little later in the program. I'll tell you about that when we come back. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steelang Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Galaxy.
We are back, and as I said, this is a little bit of a hybrid show. I think that we've done this before. So it's not completely new. It's not completely strange. I have done this before. And what we're going to do is both open line and have a guest. Now, you may have noticed that for some reason, while I'm speaking to you, some of you probably have noticed that you're getting this through one speaker and not stereo. I don't know why. We've changed nothing. As I have mentioned before, I am not computer illiterate, but I am somewhat technologically challenged when it comes to the electronics. And we'll get that figured out and get it fixed. And then we won't have to worry about that anymore. But you can hear me, so that's okay. That's a good thing. All right. When I get email, I told you I was going to talk with you about some email that I've gotten. And when I get it, I always read it, and I respond to most of the email that comes in. Now, to the writer of this email, I know he's listening, and I didn't respond. I didn't reply. And the reason was because I saved it to reply here on the show. Now, those of you who have sent me email may be, you know, sweating it and saying, oh my, he's going to scorch me. Nothing of the sort. Nothing of the sort. Here's the deal. When you write in and express your views on something, I am totally open to that. And I realize that your one email probably represents anywhere from 100 to 1,000 other people who thought the same thing but didn't take the time to write. And so your email is, when I get that email and I see those views, I know that there are a lot of folks who have the same view or very, very similar views as you express in your email. So it's very important to me. And that's why I wanted to respond to this one, because it brings up some issues that I think when you've got anywhere from 100 to 1,000 or maybe more who are thinking similar things, it's pretty important for me to respond to it. So here we go. Now, and let me tell you, I'm not going to read your name because I don't want you to feel like I'm singling you out, all right? Sometimes people get nervous if their name is mentioned on the radio or like this. This is both radio and video. So it's radio, and then those of you who are at my website, you're also getting video. I don't want you to feel like I'm singling you out, because I'm not. Your email represents from 100 to 1,000 other people who had the same thoughts. So here we go. He says, I subscribe. I assume that means he's one of our members' area subscribers. And for the most part, I'm pleased with the show, but every once in a while, you say something I take issue with. And I thought I'd take a minute to pass along a few of them. Don't want to start a feud with you or anything, so please don't bite my head off for not agreeing with you on everything. I don't. I never do. The only time that you ever see me really bite into somebody is if they make a false accusation. As long as you're expressing an opinion, your opinion is as good as my opinion, is it not? You know what they say about opinions? Everybody's got one, and some people have two or three. No problem. No problem, and no feud, all right? But I do want to answer a couple of the issues that are raised here. One of them is this. He says, a while back you made the case in support of government cover-up of issues that they think will panic the people. I strongly disagree with that. I say tell the truth regardless of the fallout. Well, you're almost right, but not quite. I haven't made a case in support of government cover-ups of UFO information. What I have done is I have said I understand why, and I have made the case for why they do it, not promoting why they do it, but I have explained. I shouldn't say I made the case. I explained the case for why they do it. I understand it. I understand it because I've lived in places where I can tell you this. I've lived in places where if you were to say something just a little bit out of step with the local theology, you would not wake up in the morning. And it wasn't Muslim. That's a caricature of Islam. That's the extremists. But this was not Islam. This was not Islam. But if you simply stepped out of line just a little bit theologically, you can live however you want to live. But if you were to step out of line, either in print or verbally, spoken word, you probably would not wake up in the morning. Not on the top side of the soil, anyway. So you're not quite right. I'm not making a case in support, and that's a quote, in support of government cover-up. I'm not. I do make the case, or I do explain the case for why they do it, because I think you need to understand why they do it. Sometimes, especially in this business, sometimes in the field of UFOs, there is this overarching thought that the government is evil. And there's a problem with that. The problem with that is you're talking about the largest employer in the United States of America. And when you say the government, that's the largest employer in this country. That means there are millions of Americans working for the government. They are the government, and they're not all evil. Are there people in there that have evil intentions? Probably. Are there people in there that hate America and want to see America fall? Sure, they catch them every once in a while. Remember the big case, you know, with the FBI guy, you know, and he's in prison now? So, yeah, but, and are there agencies that step outside of the wishes of Congress or that step outside the wishes of the president? Sure. Absolutely. And, I mean, Congress spends a great deal of its time having hearings over just such issues as that. So I'm not making a case in support of government cover-up. I've said quite openly, I want to know what's in all those files just like anybody else does. But I understand their logic. I understand why they do some of what they do. And I think it's incumbent upon us who own the government, it's incumbent upon us to understand the why. Doesn't mean we have to agree with it. And it doesn't mean that we can't work for disclosure. It just means we need to understand kind of what's behind some of that. So, no, I don't support government cover-up. Not at all. I don't support it. Except on some of the technological stuff. Now, some of the technology does not need to get into the hands of people like Chavez and whatever his name is over there in Iran, Ahmadinejad or something like that. Yeah, write to me and tell me I ought to know how to say the world leaders' names. Hey, I'm not a politician, all right? And politicians need to know that. But, you know, that technology doesn't need to get into their hands. That technology, I'm talking about technology, you know, advanced propulsion systems and advanced energy systems. I mean, look what they're trying to do already. You know, I have already declared their dedication to the death of two countries, Israel and the United States of America. They don't need that stuff. So I am in favor of covering up that kind of information. Absolutely. Absolutely. Look what a nightmare we've got right now just because the information is out about how to build nuclear bombs. Look at the mess the world is in just over that. So, yeah, absolutely. I do favor and support keeping that kind of information covered up. But the rest of it, you know, extraterrestrial races, where they're from, what are they doing here? Hey, I say let it flow. But I understand the considerations that go into the decisions that they make, and I've only explained. That's all I've done. I've explained what's behind those decisions to, quote, cover it up. Then there is this. Let's see. Uh, They're dealing with the show that I had where we talked about 2012, and he says there is an expression you used on the show in response to how we prepare for 2012. What will happen will happen. This is, he's quoting me. What will happen, and we'll all know it happens at the same time. Well, that's pretty close to what I said. He said, I've heard you say this before, and while it may be true, it does not seem to fit on a show where you're interested in answers. There are things to know so that we may prepare instead of just saying what will be, so go back to sleep. Well, I don't agree with your characterization of it. If you put it into context, we were talking about the possibility of a planet killer. We were talking about, maybe a big asteroid, or maybe the return of Planet X, and that maybe there's a collision, and, you know, all of those things. And the thing is that when you talk about all those things, it's absolutely, purely, 100% speculation. I don't care who's talking to you about it. It is speculation. And in the context of talking about a planet-killing event, I did say, and I'll say again, nobody knows. If it's a planet killer, there's not any preparation that needs to be made. You can see that. I mean, if we're talking about these planet killer situations where we're going to be hit by another planet, I mean, we were talking about the more extreme speculations that people have made about the year 2012. In that show, at that point, that's what we were talking about. Now, if it's a planet killer, there's no preparation that needs to be made. There's none that could be made. It will happen to us all at the same time. Now, if it's a regional kind of thing, then there are preparations that you can make, but what can we really know about the future? Tell me, honestly. It says it doesn't seem to fit in a show where you're interested in answers. Yeah, I'm interested in answers. That doesn't mean that this show has all the answers. Never has pretended to. I don't have all the answers. I've never pretended to and never claimed it. So we're interested in answers, but it does fit in a show where we're interested in answers, if you understand that's the answer. The answer is, right now, it's all 100% speculation. And the only sane answer that you can come up with, in my opinion, is, well, it's all speculation. Whatever's going to happen will happen. I don't think that we're going to have a planet killer situation. That's another answer that I gave in that show. I don't think so. I'm having a party in Bangkok, Thailand. I'm doing one this year, and, well, it's not a party this year. It's a little mini expedition. But I'm going to have a party in Bangkok, Thailand on December the 21st, 2012. And the purpose of that is to carry that party over into December the 22nd and see if we make it. If it's a planet killer and we're not going to make it, we'll go out having fun. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think December the 22nd, 2012, I'm going to be doing my final Christmas shopping in downtown Bangkok, Thailand. That's what I think. So there's two answers there. We didn't skirt an answer. The answer is we don't know. The answer is, since we don't know, why fret? I can tell you right now, every one of you, I can tell you with absolute certainty, you're going to die. We know that. That's the only thing you were guaranteed the day you were born. You weren't guaranteed anything else, but you came into this life with a guarantee that one day you'll die. So it's going to happen. You know what we don't know? We don't know when. We don't know how. So I don't get up every day and worry about, okay, let's see, what am I doing today? I better be careful. I don't want to die today. We don't do that. We just live. And that's my point about 2012. Just live. Right now, it's speculation. Nobody's got any real information. There are all kinds of speculations and prophecies and things like that. But just live. That's what that's about. All right, then he mentions the show that I did with Tucklow and talking about Bigfoot. And he says the thing that's most interesting to him, it's very interesting to him, is that this guy Tucklow sees Bigfoot all the time. And he said, I never met anybody that even met Bigfoot. Okay, on this show, I've told you about a lizard that lives in Southeast Asia, and it's called the FU lizard. Now, you fill in the blank. If you think I'm kidding, you look it up on Google. You'll go to Google, type that in. Just type in FU lizard, but, spell the word. You have never met an FU lizard. I have, face to face. I met them face to face every single night I lived in the jungle. But you haven't ever met anybody. You didn't even know about FU lizards until I mentioned it on this show. And you never met anybody that ever knew about FU lizards. Look it up and see if I'm telling you the truth. Just type it in, FU lizard, but, spell the word. You'll see pictures of them. And the reason they're called that is because that's what they scream. They scream, F-U, at nighttime. You will think it's a human screaming it. That's exactly what they say. And it is a real lizard. It lives in Southeast Asia. You know the reason this guy sees Bigfoot and you never met anybody that met Bigfoot? He lives where they do. You know why I know about FU lizards? Because I lived where they lived. I lived in the same jungle with them. If you live in an area of the country where there's a lot of Bigfoot, makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, that you would see Bigfoot if there's a bunch of them around there. And in this part of the country, I have had report after report after report over the past 4 years of people from that part of the country who have seen Bigfoot in that part of the country. I've tried to get people to come on and talk about it, and for some reason they won't do it. They're afraid to come on. They're for what reason, I don't know. But he was willing to come on and talk, and so we had him on, and that's why he has seen Bigfoot and you haven't, because he lives where they live. Same with the FU lizard. Have you ever had a cobra in your house? Have you ever known anybody that did have a cobra in their house? I'm not talking about in an aquarium. I'm talking about from the wild, just crawled into the house. Well, now you know somebody. I've had it. Okay? And how come you don't know anybody personally that ever had a cobra crawl into their house? Because they didn't live where the cobras lived. I did. All right? So that's why. And, you have to put information in the context that it's in, and don't try to make it fit a mold or a context that it's not in. And then understand, on this show, I say what I say, not what you wish I had said. I say exactly what I say, precisely, plus nothing, minus nothing. It says exactly what it says. And so I don't know. It takes a little while to get used to listening to that because we're so used to listening to approximated speech. Well, my speech is not approximated speech. My friends, my speech is precise. If I say it, I mean it. And I don't mean something else. So if I say A, I mean A, not sort of A or A plus a little bit. I just mean A. I want to thank you for that email. It was great. And I want to encourage the rest of you to write to me as well. We'll be back right after this. We are back. Now, we're going. I've got Steve on the line with me, but we're going to do something right now that there's just no other way to do this. We're live, and there's just really no other way for me to do this. I've got to try and do something here to fix this this problem with us not having my mic in stereo, all right? So, don't go away. Watch this. All right, let's see. Well, there we go. We're in stereo now, finally. What can I say? All right, the other night I mentioned, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that the pyramid over in Mexico, at Mexico City, that pyramid has a system of tunnels under it. It's got some tunnels under it. And I talked about that a little bit and the fact that they're going to be opening those up. And the next day, I had a telephone call, voicemail, and I returned the telephone call, and it was Steve. And he said, yeah, I just want to let you know, I've been in those tunnels. Steve, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm glad to be here and give you some information, on first-hand information, as a matter of fact.
All right. Now, the first thing I want to do, I want to go to, for those who are watching the show, I want to go to a picture of that pyramid. Now, that's not what's on your screen right now, but let me get there. All right, there's the pyramid. And this is located in the outskirts of Mexico City. Tell us a little bit about when you were there and the circumstances about why you were there.
Okay. Kevin, we were, it was in the early 70s, I'm going to say about a 73, probably the summer of 73. My father, who was a pioneer, more or less, he still is to this day. He took me and my brothers, I have one younger brother, one older brother, and we went on a trip to Mexico, and we were going to go to the pyramids in Cholula, Puebla, and that is to see the Great Pyramid of Cholula, which is the largest pyramid in the world. And from there, we were going to go to Veracruz to see the Tajín pyramid there. And along the way, my mother spoke fluent Spanish, and my father was Pennsylvania Dutch, and my mom did all the translating. And, you know, in those days, it was the only fear you had of going to Mexico was drinking the water. There was it was a very peaceful country. And anyway, we were going throughout the country. We got into the vicinity of the Mexico City, and we stopped and talked to some locals. And anyway, we started asking. My dad asked some questions, and found out that there was some archaeological digs going on at the Teotihuacan site, which is actually the Pyramid of the Sun that you have in your picture. Uh-huh. And so we decided to drive out there. It was kind of not. It was not on our schedule to go there, but it wasn't that far from where we were. And we said, well, you know, we're going to go out there and check it out. So we did, and so we got there, and it was pretty amazing because I was a young man, you know, probably 14 years old, and we drive out like driving, you know, through the desert, and we arrive here at the complex, at the Teotihuacan complex, and you know, right there is the Pyramid of the Sun. Well, anyway, we kind of there's hardly any people. As a matter of fact, I don't recall anybody being there at the time of day that we were there. And we kind of saw evidence. You know, you could see where some archaeological digs were going on, and there was some walkways. You could see where they had been, you know, having trafficking little walkways to where they were going. So we just kind of I'm not saying it was nobody. It was a few people around, but so we didn't ask any questions. We just kind of, you know, saw where the work was being done and kind of made our way over there. And anyway, there was this little bridge that was kind of created to go over this little ravine area, which was, I'm going to say, approximately maybe 100 yards from the entrance to the tunnel, which is at the base of the pyramid. And on the other side of the tunnel, and well, let me just say that I emailed you those pictures of that artifact. It's an axe head with that hole. It's like a perfectly drilled hole through the center of the axe head. And I've tried to research that on the internet, and I cannot see a duplicate of that type of construction on an axe head. I don't know where it was found was that, like I said, when you crossed over this bridge, and we walked up to the bridge, this bridge was probably about maybe 20 feet across, and it wasn't like a bridge. It was more like something you would see in an Indiana Jones movie, where it was just some wood that was kind of knotted together, and it's like a, you know, reeds, like big bamboo looking stuff, and you just kind of walked across that just to get across the that little ravine area and stay on level ground. Well, anyway, since you know, on the other side, you can see that they had all of these little barriers set up where the archaeological digs were going on. And these were like barriers that were like, it was like a stake in the ground with a little twine running from area to area that they had.
So they kind of, they sort of had it roped off.
Yeah, kind of roped off. It was maybe like for my size at that age, it was like maybe calf high. It wasn't nothing to really keep anybody out, you know. And but it just kind of alerted you that, hey, there's some work going on here. Don't come in here. Well, my older brother, I was the kind of person who said, you know what, I see the significance of this rope, and I'm not going to go in there. Well, my brother, and anyway, by this time, let me just say that by this time, my dad and my mom had gone forward, and they were up near the entrance to the tunnel, and they were talking to an individual, as I recall. And my older brother, Mike, he jumps under the bridge. He goes down the side of the little kind of ravine thing. It's not real deep. It might have been maybe an 8-foot ravine right there. Well, he goes and he goes underneath the bridge so that my dad wouldn't see him. And he goes down there tooling around, digging around, and finds the axe head just under the bridge. So he comes up. He says, "Hey, Steven," you know, he's calling me. He shows me. He comes back up, and I'm telling Mike, "What are you doing?" I said, "You know, this is like sacred ground. You can't just take things from this site." Well, anyway, he slips it in his pocket, and like no big deal. So, and I didn't really think much about it, you know. So we go, we continue on, and like I said, it was
how old was, were you then?
I was about 14. My brother is 3 years older than I am, so he was 17. And I had another brother, he was a year younger than I am, so he was about 13.
All right.
And so he's got it in his pocket, and we're walking along this little path, and literally, I mean, you could see where they've been excavating, and it was unreal because you could literally see shards of pottery, just stuff that you wouldn't imagine. It was just laying on the ground. I mean, it was just so tempting to just reach over the little rope and just pick something up. They were like cataloging things, and they were not moving them. They were just leaving them there. And we just happened to be there at a time of day where I'm thinking, you know, now that I think about it, that it must have been either siesta time or some time where there was no work going on. And but anyway, we didn't go into the... nobody went into the little areas and took any of the artifacts, you know, the pottery or anything that was there. But it was clearly visible that it was just there to, you know.
You said this was in the early 70s, right?
Right.
What year do you think it was?
I'm going to say it was about 73. I'm going to say it was about 1973.
All right. So, did you go inside the pyramid?
Yes, we went. We went up to the tunnel, and they had some extension cords that they had ran through there, and they had some generators running. And what they did is they attached lighting up at the top. You know, I don't know how they fastened up the cord to the top of the. Of the tunnel, but they had it, and it was lit up, very dimly lit for like as far as you could see, and it was a very long span. I'm going to say about 100 yards.
Now, is this the you're talking about the tunnels, or are you talking about inside the pyramid?
This is the tunnel that went underneath the pyramid.
All right. Now, what we're looking at now is not that actual tunnel, but it is a tunnel, a very similar tunnel, you said.
It's very similar. The way I recall it, had a Gothic type look at the crest of the tunnel. It wasn't just like a squared off entrance. It had some form to it. As you went in there, like I said, once we entered the tunnel, you know, it was kind of scary because you didn't know. I had never been in a tunnel like that before. That was the first time in my short lifetime that I had experienced something like that. But what I remember was that when you walked in, it was very dark, dimly lit. Walls were stone and damp. They were kind of damp.
We're going to have to take a break. Just hold the rest of the story till after the break, all right? We'll be back right after this, folks. Don't go away.
Sophie's the queen of design. She draws every face she can find. Chip off the block, they all say.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
We are back, and we're talking with Steve about his trip to Mexico when he was 14 years old, and went to the. I can't pronounce it, Steve. How do you pronounce it?
It's kind of like peyote, but it's Teotihuacan.
Okay, you got
Teotihuacan. It. Teotihuacan.
You're the man.
And. And the easy part to remember, just call it the Pyramid of the Sun. That's really the grand pyramid of the whole complex. That's a very large complex that covers about 12 square miles.
All right. Now, when you went into the tunnel, I mean, there wasn't anybody there to keep you from going in? There was no barrier or nothing?
No, there was nothing. There was, like, nobody there. There was somebody that I remember my mom and dad were talking to at the entrance. And they just kind of started going through. I think that he just said, you know, I'm gonna guess and say that he said, go ahead and go through, because I mean there was no, I don't recall any tourists, I don't recall, like I said, not, I mean, no workers, because I mean all the archaeological areas that you could see that they were digging in were just there. There was nobody doing any work. So I don't recall, I'm thinking there may have been a part of the day where it was siesta and everybody just was taking a nap, maybe. And we just happened to be there because we didn't know, I mean, we just kind of just, like I said, it was kind of off our beaten path, and we decided to go there, and maybe we just hit it at the right time. And so went in.
You go into the tunnels, did you see any kind of artifacts in the tunnels, any type of drawings or carvings or statues or anything?
Okay, Kevin, the only thing that I remember about the tunnels was that it was a very long tunnel, and off, if you, every time you walked, let's say you walked about 15, 20 yards into the tunnel, there was like a little cutouts in the wall that to me, they looked like they were like little altars of some sort in little cavities in the wall.
All right, now, on the screen right now, what we're looking at is a photo that you sent me of a very similar tunnel. It's the one, actually, it looks like it's carved out of ice. It looks white. But we can see on the left side of that tunnel, there appears to be a little cutout on the left.
I'm not looking at my monitor right now, but I would say that was probably pretty typical. Those photos that I sent you are photos from the Cholula Pyramid, and most scholars that deal with this period of pyramid in this time believe that the Great Pyramid of Cholula and the Pyramid of the Sun and Teotihuacan were part of the same people that built the Pyramid of the Sun, built the pyramid, the Great Pyramid in
Cholula.
Cholula.
All right. Now, at about what time in history were these built?
Well, the complex in off of Mexico City that we're talking about, with the Pyramid of the Sun, that began probably in about 100 BC. The people that they know that people were living in that area about 500 BC, and the actual construction began on the complex about 100 BC, and it was completed sometime around 300 AD.
So it took about 400 years to build it.
It was about 400 years to build it. And
that's amazing. They did it over in Egypt, according to Egyptologists, in the lifespan of one man.
Well, that's quite an accomplishment.
Nobody believes.
Now this is a whole complex. Now you got to remember, this is a 12 square mile complex of not just the Pyramid of the Sun, but there's also many other pyramids at this site. And there's also roads. I mean, this was a great undertaking. The actual building of the pyramid, the time that it took to build that, I don't know the exact details. But let me allude back to the tunnel just for a moment. I forgot to mention that now as you went, I remember that all of the altars as I walked through the tunnel were to my right. And to my left, there were other tunnels that went back into the pyramid, but these were closed off. They were like either they were roped or they were partially dug, and that was it. So the article that was in the press recently, it mentions the tunnel, but it also mentions that the cave, that what they're trying to do is to redig out the cave that is under the pyramid that connects to the tunnels. So that's an important thing to remember, because it's the cave system that was abandoned and refilled by that archaeologist in the 70s.
When he first discovered that, it had already been sealed off, apparently, by the Aztecs.
Right. That's correct.
Why do you think they sealed it off?
Well, I think, when I first read this article, it just so happened that I had read an article just recently about, and this kind of sounds kind of far out there, but I'm just going to throw this in, that, the Dome of the Rock, you've heard of the Dome of the Rock?
Sure.
Well, the Dome of the Rock is built on top of a cave, okay? Inside the Dome of the Rock is the rock. Well, under the rock, there's a cave.
Right.
And I thought it was interesting because, you remember the Well of Souls in the Indiana Jones movies. Well, that is the name of the cave. It was called the Well of Souls. And how it got its name was that certain religious leaders that have the privilege to go down into this cave testify that you could hear the sounds of the departed, and it was a joyful noise, and supposedly they could hear the running waters that were in paradise. Okay, so, and that kind of made me think a little bit about this cave that is under the Pyramid of the Sun, and perhaps the because you have to remember that, okay, we have pyramids in Egypt, we have pyramids in Mexico. All of this is happening around the same time frame. And I'm thinking, when I read that, I kind of thinking that maybe because the people that built the complex, the Teotihuacanos, they call them Teotihuacanos, that was the name that the Aztecs gave these people. Nobody really knows the name of these people or where they came from, who they are, what language they spoke, what their religious beliefs were. This, all of those things are still unknown to this day. That's what they hope to uncover when they excavate this cave. Maybe there's some evidence down there to substantiate and to bring to light something about their culture. Well, anyway, what they did is there's some scholars that believe that this cave was a sacred cave, and that the high priest would go into this cave, and I don't know. Well, I don't know what they would do, but basically, they believe there was a sacred cave, and that it was probably the place where they believe that that was the place where the gods created the world.
You know, there is a saying about that cave and about those tunnels. The Aztecs said this is the place where men become gods.
That's true. There's that translation, Kevin, and there's another translation that says the place where gods were born, and. So those are the two most common translations, like you said, the one that the place where men become gods, and the other one being place where gods were born. And the whole complex, this whole pyramid, like I said, this is the third largest pyramid on the face of the planet, was built upon this cave structure that that they know is there, and for some reason it was closed up. It's not open to the public. I don't think the public has ever seen it. So
you've seen the entrance to this cave, but it was closed up.
I've seen the entrance into the tunnel, and I can say that I saw there was little side chute tunnels that came off of the main tunnel. That I'm thinking that they actually may have gone down towards to where this cave was. This cave is maybe 20 to 30 feet below the base of the pyramid, and that cave structure was always there since it was a natural formation since the beginning of time, and then these people that built that began the construction on that pyramid, in about 500 BC, decided that they would build it there.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. More with Steve on this story about this very mysterious cave and tunnel system under the pyramid in Mexico City.
I'm all alone. know where I'm coming from. A lot of give and a lot less take. And when I know that day is done, just wanna be close to anyone. Guess I'll just close my eyes and dream the day, yeah, yeah. Open the door, take in the day. The rentals, yeah, they're gone. I'll stay. Why do we listen to what they do, what they say? Don't think we can make it a better way. Dream the day, dream the day. Yeah, yeah. Open the door, take in the day. Adrenals, yeah, they're gone anyway. When you crash, you know I'll stay. Why do we listen to what they do, what they say? Don't think we can make it a better way. Dream that day.
All right, we are back, and we're talking with Steve. We're talking about this very mysterious cave system and tunnel system under the Pyramid of the Sun in Mexico.
Steve, you mentioned that the story is that, no, you didn't. You didn't say it was the story. You said it's sort of your speculation that it may be something kind of like the Well of Souls. But you said that's what they call it. That's what they call this cave, the Well of Souls.
Well, the Well of Souls was the name of the cave under the Dome of the Rock.
Oh, okay.
And the reason because of the name is because the priests could go there into the cave and hear departed spirits and so forth.
So you're speculating that this cave under the Pyramid of the Sun may be something similar to that.
Yes, that's what I think. I think that the high priest of that society may have used that cave for the same purposes as to go there and to call upon their deities and perhaps these people were very fierce people. They did a lot of thousands. They sacrificed thousands and thousands of people as part of their belief system that the end of the world was near, and they believed that if they sacrificed people to the gods, that would divert the coming cataclysm of the end of the world. So they kept doing this, and so I think that they would go into this cave and somehow, like I say, channel and speak to their deities, or maybe hear voices.
Well, do you have any idea why they sealed this cave up?
I have no idea. Maybe he heard something and didn't like it and closed it up. I don't know. I mean, there could be. It's really a mystery why it's closed up. I'm thinking that it could be at such a depth that it's maybe filled with water there's just no way to know. But I think
it may be something
knows.
Yeah, it may be something that mundane. On the other hand, there is solid evidence that there once lived at least one race of true giants in South America. It's not speculation.
Right.
It is solid evidence. They were seen by early Spanish explorers. They were seen by early missionaries. And they wrote about these things. Captain Cook actually had one on board his ship, thought he was captive, and was returning to Europe with him. And the giant broke free and jumped overboard. And we had a guest on the show that talked about that and said it's in the ship's log. It's in the captain's log.
The tunnels are 8 feet tall approximately, so that would be a giant size.
It would be a big person. Now,
absolutely.
Here's what I wonder. Purely speculation now. It is absolutely just a flight of fancy. But we've heard all these stories about how there are civilizations living inside the Earth, and that some of them are giants. This is in an area of Earth where we know for sure there were giants. We don't speculate, we know there were giants. And it just may be possible, since they claim that the gods came out of these caves, out of this cave.
Right.
It just may be possible that is an entrance to inner Earth from where these giants came. It may be possible that is what we've got here. What do you think about that?
I believe that it could be possible. I mean, there's cave structures that are in that region of Mexico that go on for a long way into the earth. I remember probably about 5 years ago. I think it was right around Mexico City, where some spelunkers actually went into some caves. I mean, they went like 20 or 30 miles into these caves, and the caves just kept on going, and they literally had to stop and return back because of supplies and other things that they needed to continue. They couldn't go no further. Some of the largest cave systems in the world are in Mexico. That's a fact.
Well,
I agree with you. I think that maybe that the original people that nobody, like I said, there's no record of who these people were. They all left at the same time. You know what I mean? The whole city was basically abandoned at a certain time frame, and there was other cities that were surrounding Mexico City, not just this complex. There was other ones as well, but they were also abandoned as well at that same time frame. And nobody knows why these people left. Nobody knows where they went, how come they went, or I mean, there's a lot of speculation. But maybe they went in the tunnel. Who knows? You know, there's a possibility that one of the stories
that we've heard about these giants, and the stories come from missionaries, and they also come from the local people who live in those areas now in South America, that these giants were man-eaters. They were cannibals. And that may be the reason for the human sacrifice.
That's very possible. I mean, they were known as a very treacherous people. They were very, I would assume that, I mean, when they built the pyramids, they discovered caches of skeletons along the perimeter of the pyramids. It was their tradition to sacrifice children at the corners of the pyramids. They found evidence of children's bodies that were buried at the corners of the pyramids. So they had very ritualistic ways of doing things, and I'm sure the cannibalism was probably one of them. I mean, we know the stories of the Maya, how they would rip the hearts out of men and present them to the gods, and I think that they would even eat the flesh. So it wouldn't be uncommon for that type of behavior to be in that part of Central America at that time.
All right, now in the tunnels, when you went in, you didn't see any markings, no carvings, no markings, nothing.
No.
All right.
These were just slick walls.
Now, you mentioned something about seeing some altars in there.
Correct.
Describe that for us.
As you walk down, the, I'm going to say they were probably about 4.5 feet off the ground, and you could probably perch an urn, like it was probably maybe a foot deep by maybe 2 feet wide by maybe 2 or 3 feet tall. Like something was there at one time. I don't know what it was. I don't know. Maybe they used it to burn incense. You know, I have no clue what those were, but they were common. Like I said, every 20, 30 yards, there was another one, and then another one.
I've got to ask you this question. Did you see smoke stains?
I wasn't cognizant of any, and to tell you the truth, Kevin, it was very, like I said, it was very dimly lit in there. And the light that you could see well was the light that was in front of you at the end of the tunnel. So I didn't see the ceilings being as high as they were. I would have not seen that. I didn't look for it either. So it could have been there. I just didn't notice it.
Mm-hmm. Well, because see, the question then has to be, if they were going into these tunnels, how did they illuminate these tunnels? And if they were using the technology that we have been told existed at that time, they would have been burning torches or oil lamps or something. There would have been a flame, and there would have been soot. And I think that's going to be a very interesting and key question that we're going to want to ask these archaeologists when they get through excavating the cave and the tunnel system. Over in Egypt, and this is quite interesting, there aren't any soot stains. You know, you go into the Great Pyramid, there are no soot stains. There's no smoke. And you got to wonder, how did they light inside of the pyramid as they worked on it? And what's interesting is that there is a carving that shows what appears to be an electric lamp. And, you know, and then I guess you may have heard of the Baghdad batteries. They're called the Baghdad batteries because they are batteries that were found near Baghdad. And but they are not batteries from modern times. These batteries are thousands of years old. They're clay pots with a construction on the inside of them that when the scientists looked at them, one of the scientists said, well, that's a battery. So they made a model of one using the same materials and poured weak acid in, and it produced voltage.
Well, that's interesting. I know that that crystals, large crystals and small crystals, they're able to produce a light under certain conditions and actually retain, like continue to glow. You know, they have like a what they call it, a piezoelectric effect, where when a certain energy is put upon them, they'll glow. And maybe they had some knowledge of that to illuminate the darkened, you know, tunnels or caves. But certainly they would have to have some form of light, because anybody that's ever been in a cave knows that the one thing about caves are they're dark. They're very dark.
Well, are you familiar with, or at least you've heard about the Carlsbad Cavern in New Mexico?
Oh, yes.
I've been in that more than once. And there is a point when you're about halfway down. If you go the full trip, you're about a mile underground. But about halfway down, there is a point, and you're in a huge chamber. And they have everyone stand still and against the railing for safety, and then they turn out the lights. You literally cannot see your hand in front of your face. You simply can't see anything. And once you get in these caves, that's the way it is.
I that would be very, very troubling to me to be in a situation like that, especially like in these tunnels, like in Mexico, and in these pyramids, and in these cave systems, because the way I saw it is there's one way in, one way out. There was no multiple exits. So I know that, you know, another interesting aspect of that culture, Kevin, is that the when they left, like I said, it's unknown. So the reason is still unknown to this day what happened to these people. But basically the whole complex was abandoned for about 700 years before the Aztecs found it. They found it and occupied it after that point. So
the whole complex was there when they found it, right?
Yes. Yes, they found it and occupied it. They were basically squatters that came in and named it. The name that the Teotihuacan name was actually a name that was given by the Aztecs, because the original name is not known.
Do we know the translation of that name?
Well, the name, like I said earlier, it's got multiple translations. The best one would be the place where men become gods. The other one is the city of gods, and the other one is the place where gods were born. And and the reason that they say this is because they believe that this site is where the gods recreated the universe, the sun, the moon, and the stars, after the old world had passed away.
Okay.
So their belief system, and that's where that comes from.
Belief, it is quite interesting, isn't it, that as we are now approaching 2012, where the Mayans say this era ends in 2012, and here we are approaching that date, and they plan to open up the place where the Aztecs say it all started over again.
That is very interesting, Kevin. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. Something that I wanted to mention and that kind of jogged my memory was that the people, the Aztecs believed that there was certain cycles of the sun, and there was four cycles of the sun, and they were living in the fifth cycle of the sun, and that was the reason why they were. That was the reason why there was so much sacrificing going on, because they thought that the end of the world was at hand, and the only way to divert or to put off the end of the world was to sacrifice souls to the gods. And but I just say that to mention that the cycles of the sun, and I know that the Maya calendar, I'm not an authority on that, but I do know that it has cycles based upon time frames as well.
Yeah, now this may be totally, completely coincidental, but I do admit that I find it interesting that as we are approaching this end of the age, according to the Mayans, which will, according to them, happen December the 21st, 2012. This has been sealed up. We don't know why the archaeologist sealed it all back up, but he did. And here, now, after all this time, and we're on the very edge of 2012, they're going to open it. Now, that's a bit mysterious.
That is very mysterious. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is 1-623-581-5148. 1-623-581-5148. And if you live outside of the United States or Canada, you can send me a flash message. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, all right? And the telephone number is up on your screen for those of you who are watching the show. For those of you who are listening to the show, Again, it is 1-623-581-5148. All right, I want to go back to this, to the axe that you found, or that your brother found.
Right.
And have you had any kind of analysis or scientific research done on this axe?
Well, actually, we did. My brother had it. He took it. At that time, we lived in San Antonio, Texas. And when we returned back, my brother knew some people that attended the university there, and he had it. He had his one of his buddies take it to the university and have it analyzed specifically to see the hole that was drilled through the center of the axe, which we thought was very unusual.
Why? What's unusual about it?
Well, you know, when I took it out the other day, I've been lugging this thing around for like a very long time now, you know, 30 years, and I've got it in a box in the garage. But basically, the thing that's peculiar to me is that when you look down the bore, like I could take a mar gauge. I don't know if you want a mar gauge, but a mar gauge actually measures the hole size through the complete depth of the hole. And if you look through this hole, it does not vary. I'm going to say, you know, it's just visually, I didn't put a gauge on it, but just visually, because I'm accustomed to looking at things like this, but I'm going to say it doesn't, maybe 5/1000ths, I'm going to say it has probably about 5/1000ths variance on it, from one side through the other, which is probably about 3 or 4 inches through. And, I mean, that is a stone that was cut. And I don't know what kind of tool. You have to remember that this pyramid site was first occupied in about 500 B.C. So we're talking prehistoric. Almost, I mean, it's not prehistoric, but it's very early construction. And then later on, even into up to about 500 A.D. And we just don't know. We could not imagine what kind of tools that these Indians could have had to produce a perfect hole that goes through the center of that stone. And so they analyzed the stone, and you know, they did carbon date it, but I don't recall what the date was. We didn't get any nothing like a piece of paper saying that this was carbon dated to this date, but I do recall that it was in that time frame of I want to say, you know, let's say 1 AD or sometime around there. So, but we don't know actually, was it the inhabitants that originally built, or, you know, the pyramid, or was it the Aztecs, or, you know, we don't know which society used this tool. And it looks like it's been used, because on the sharp edge side of the axe, it's missing some material. And maybe it was just, it could have been, who knows what caused it to be missing that material. But the scientists there at the university had no explanation to how the hole was done. They just did not have an explanation for it.
Well, I don't know how much you know about me. I'm an ex-cop. One of the things that you always look for are markings. For instance, let's say that you have a building that you have the door closed and it's locked, and then you have either a hasp and lock, or you have a chain, and someone uses bolt cutters to cut through that. Well, you want to pick up the pieces that have the ends that have been cut. And that becomes evidence, because later, if you develop a suspect and the investigation goes far enough that you're able to either search his car or search his house or whatever, and you find a pair of bolt cutters, they can be matched. The bolt cutters have markings, just like a gun. The bolt cutters have unique markings that they leave their impressions on whatever they cut, and you can match them. Well, I can't, but of course the forensic scientists can. When you look down into this hole that's been drilled into this axe head, when you look down into it, can you see any markings down in there?
I can. It kind of looks like a the barrel of a gun. Let's say, you know, you have the I don't recall the terminology for the what you call that barrel area. You know, that kind of rolls, spirals through.
It's the rifling.
Yeah, the rifling, and it kind of has a rifling effect, but it's not curly Q. It's not spiraling through, but it's actually there's like separate rings. It's a ring. It's kind of like it.
Like a stack of rings.
Like a stack of rings. I would say it would be like a counterbore, like a counterbore instrument that actually kind of reamed it out. It looks like it was reamed out with a primitive tool that actually left cut marks along the inner diameter of that hole. And I tried to capture that in some of the photos, and I think there's a few of them where you can see a little bit of that. Yeah, you can definitely see the marks on the inside of the bore. And on the outside, there's two clear marks on the top of the axe that show where it maybe there was something there that actually fastened it to whatever it was that it was fastened to. Now, Kevin, I did do some research to see other type artifacts of that era that had holes in them, and I was very I didn't find very many, and most of the ones that I found were related to people items that people wore during ceremonies and stuff like that, the way they would drill a hole and put something through it and wear it.
Those would be very small holes, wouldn't they?
Right, yeah, no, this is definitely an axe. I mean, this was definitely used to club somebody or something. But I say the actual drilling of the hole is kind of amazing because, I have some Indian relics, you know, that are hundreds of years later and not as good a quality as that.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Steve. Some firsthand, hands-on experience with this mysterious location, the Pyramid of the Sun in Mexico. We'll be back right after this.
Contemplating time travel. If I could travel back in time tonight, I know exactly what I'd do. I would be standing on your doorstep, baby, singing these words, shouting them to you, saying, stay with me. Oh, baby, won't you stay with me? A list and check it twice, and just forget the Santa Claus. I would be flying back across the years and standing at your door, because I'm moving a little faster than the speed of light. As Albert raises one eyebrow, I would be knocking on your door again, baby, singing these words, shouting them out, saying, stay. Baby, won't you stay with me? Because I'm begging, please. Oh, baby, won't you stay with me? Every once in a while, your heart gets wondering how your life might have been if you'd have made a left instead of taking that right. Well, go ahead and wander. It ain't no sin now. Stay. Stay with me, because I'm begging, please. travel back in time tonight, I know exactly where I'd go. Driving across the years down dusty roads that take me to your door, because it's taking forever just to realize exactly what I should have said. But in a moment I'm back at your door, singing the words that echo in my head. Stay with me, oh baby, won't you stay with me? Because I'm begging, please, oh baby, won't you stay with me? Stay with me, oh baby, won't you stay with me?
Right, we are back, and we're talking with Steve.
Steve, was there any other, were there any other artifacts laying around that you could see other than this axe head?
Now, Kevin, like I said, when I went over the bridge, my brother actually went under the bridge and did his own archaeological dig, and he found the axe head literally within about a few minutes. So this whole area was, not a good word, but it was actually littered with archaeological evidence, such as pottery, the axe head that just so happens that it just happened to be under the bridge. I'm sure that there was other artifacts. I remember specifically seeing pottery, shards of pottery, bowls and such that were kind of half in the earth and half sticking out. There was different layers of ground or sediment that had been removed, like they were trying to catalog what they were finding prior to moving it to wherever it is they were going to move it to. But like I said, it was really bizarre, because you walk down this path and there was little string that was outlining the perimeters of the excavation areas, and it was just like I could have just easily walked through there like walking through my garden, and nobody would have ever known. I mean, it was just that bizarre. There was just nobody there at the time, and it was just very, I think,
yeah,
back
because
now,
you know, I've seen pictures of this pyramid literally covered with people. I mean, just it looks like thousands of people climbing this pyramid.
Right.
And it seems odd that there would be no one there. Do you know why there would be no one there?
Well, I'm thinking that we went to maybe on a certain area where they were doing this excavation. You know, maybe it was just a private area that was away from the general public, you know, touristy areas. It's kind of like that's the only way I can explain it. You know, that I there was nobody around. I don't recall being. I mean, we went through the tunnel, and we were the. If you could look, I remember looking back and forth. We were the only ones in there.
It's interesting. And, you know, you think about, you know, the Mayan just disappeared. The Inca just disappeared. The Aztec just disappeared. And the people who built this pyramid complex just disappeared. And right here, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm in the Valley of the Sun here. And there is a tribe of ancient people that lived here, referred to as the Hohokam. They just disappeared. Further north, there are dwelling places built by, I think most people are familiar with them, the Anasazi. Just disappeared. And nobody knows why. All of these places just, it's as if they just shut down, closed the city, and walked away.
It's it's very odd. I think that there's a definite connection with all of the different societies that have just disappeared. I know. I want to go back to the temple that is in Cholula. The Great Pyramid in Cholula was dedicated when that temple was dedicated to Quetzalcoatl, and Quetzalcoatl was he was a winged a deity. Okay, and there's a lot of a lot out there that has to do with Quetzalcoatl. But the thing is that I want to say is that these people understood who Quetzalcoatl was, and they more or less saw him as someone who went through the sky. He was a god of the air, more or less. And you know, this complex here in Teotihuacan, like I said, it basically means the city of gods, and it means that, and what the Aztecs believed was that all of the gods had gathered here at this place in history to recreate the sun and the moon and the new world, because the old world had been destroyed. And when they say that the gods had gathered here, you can visualize a lot of things, but you have to also remember, like I said, that they dedicated the same people down in Cholula dedicated their pyramids to Quetzalcoatl, and there's also a pyramid on this site that was dedicated to Quetzalcoatl as well. It was the temple of Quetzalcoatl, and it's in this same facility.
Do you know when Quetzalcoatl first showed up?
I do not know. I think that
it was in the same year that the Egyptian god referred to as Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, was banished from Egypt. In the same year, Quetzalcoatl shows up. His sacred number is the same as the sacred number used by Thoth. And, you know, I should have my notes in front of me for this because I can't remember exactly, but I think the number is 59. And it was his sacred number, for whatever that means. But it's the same. Thoth was the god of education, and he was the god of wisdom. And he was a winged god. And Quetzalcoatl is the god of education and wisdom, or science, and was a winged god. I find that because of the similarities and the fact that he shows up in the same year that Thoth is banished, that there's probably some historical fact to the story. How would the people in Central America and in the Yucatan, how would they have come up with the exact same descriptions as the god Thoth over in Egypt? And they didn't have it before he was banished from Egypt. So I think there's got to be kernel of truth in that story, that it's not just mythology, that there was an actual being of some type, unknown to me, but an actual person that in Egypt was called Thoth and in Central America called Quetzalcoatl. I think it was a real person.
I think you're right. I'm doing a little investigation on the actual complex at Teotihuacan. The scholars noticed that a lot of the alignment of the different temples align in the same manner that the pyramids in Egypt aligned to certain celestial objects in the sky. And I mean, it's kind of coincidental, but there's an identical the way that the temples are laid out to the Egyptian, the way that they laid out their temples as well. The they call, I think that the road that leads into the complex is called the I don't remember, I think it's called the Road of Death. And but anyway, the end of the road, it points to where Pleiades, the constellation Pleiades, falls in the horizon. So, and I'm sure you've heard of the Pleiades before, and that's kind of and this is kind of far fetched, but I believe it was the Betty and Barney Hill case where Betty had said that after being her recall was that the entities or whoever that they gave her the information came from the Pleiades, they were the Pleiadians.
You know, it's pretty interesting because, did you know that that's one of the few constellations that's actually named in the Bible?
I did not know that.
It's called the Seven Sisters. And that was the common way of describing the Pleiades at the time when that part of the Bible was written. It was referred to as the constellation of the Seven Sisters, and it's one of the few constellations that's actually named. Now, the question about that I've always had is why I mean, there are millions of constellations out there, why that one? Why is that one named? And there are a couple of places actually where it talks about the Seven Sisters, the Pleiades. And again, why? And then that constellation shows up again and again and again as being important in ancient writings of ancient civilizations around the world. And then here, this is not ancient writing; it's the alignment of the roadway going into the complex. So it's pretty interesting. There's just a lot of things here that seem to be way, way beyond just coincidence.
Kevin, I have a little blurb here that I've taken from the internet. If I can go ahead and say this.
Sure.
It basically says that,
hang on, and we'll get to it right after this break, all right?
All right, folks, we'll be back. More with Steve and this first-hand eyewitness testimony from the Pyramid of the Sun.
Sunshine.
We are back. I want to remind you of a couple of things, and that we're going to get back to Steve and let him read what he was going to read to us. Let me remind you, if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do right now, because after the show, we're going to be starting to send it out. You want to get your name on that list. It's free. No strings attached, all right? And then I also want to remind you that the music you hear on this show, for the most part, not all of it, but about 99% of it, is from the independent artists over at GarageBand.com. And you can go over there and download music to your heart's content. It's great stuff, isn't it? And I applaud the independent artists for their tremendous contribution with great music. Tremendous contribution to the culture of our country. All right, Steve. Well, that's the wrong button. Let's push the right button. Steve, are you with me?
I'm here, Kevin.
I told you I'm technologically challenged.
Well, in this day and age, from 1 month to the next, you're bombarded with new technology. You got to relearn it every month now. So.
Yeah.
I understand. I want to just relate something back to what you were saying about the Egyptian connection. This is an article I read, and I'm going to go ahead and read it, but it just says that the whole city of Teotihuacan seems to be aligned astronomically. It is consistently oriented 15 to 25 degrees east of true north, and the front wall of the pyramid of the sun is exactly perpendicular to the point on the horizon where the sun sets on the equinoxes. The rest of the ceremonial buildings were laid out at right angles to the pyramid of the sun. The Avenue of the Dead, which is that road I was talking about, points at the setting of the Pleiades. Another alignment is to the dog star Sirius, sacred to the ancient Egyptians, which has led some to suggest a link between the Great Pyramid of Egypt and the Temple of the Sun. So there's the connection there that some scholars are leaning towards. And
they're saying that there is a connection, right?
Yes. The way that the complex is laid out, in both in degrees and with the way that they point to the certain celestial objects in the sky, that and specifically the dog star Sirius, which was a sacred star to the ancient Egyptians, and this complex also incorporates that same layout.
So what do you make of it? Do you think that this is maybe just some guys from Egypt and their boat got lost, or do you think this might be that personage known as Thoth that came across the ocean? What do you think?
I believe it had to be some highly sophisticated people, some master masons. I mean, like, you have to, this complex is a 12-square-mile complex, and not all of it has ever been excavated. Whoever created this facility had to have a broad base of knowledge, and I believe, as you're leading to, that maybe there was some transfer of knowledge that came from Egypt to the Central American regions, where there was a transfer of information, and they incorporated it into their building structure. I mean, you know, you got pyramids on two sides of the globe at the same era of time, and pretty much. And
well, you know, there's also this: a lot of those ancient pharaohs in Egypt, quite a number of them, had elongated skulls, elongated heads. And in Central and South America, there have been found skeletons with the elongated skulls. And according to one guest that we had on, in fact, according to several guests, but the most recent one, Jerry Wills, archaeologists told him, with reference to one of the elongated skulls, that that's a bone structure unlike any human we have ever seen.
Well,
so perhaps it's the same, you know, the ones that were in Egypt with the elongated skulls. Perhaps that's the same bunch that came across and built these pyramids.
It's very plausible. It's possible. As far as the information that is known in this day, that's just as good a plausible explanation as any other. Like I say, the origins of these people are not known. And I don't think they're going to dig up enough evidence out of this cave to end that. And finalize that so that they kind of know who these people were. I think it's going to remain a mystery, and a continuing mystery of who these people were, where did they come from, and where did they go? It's kind of like you would almost think that a big exodus of people just left. Where did they go?
You know, when they open this cave, yeah. Now, when they open this cave, it may be that they find drawings and writing and carvings that will tell them something about who was living in the cave anyway. And what I wonder is if they're going to fling open the cave as readily as they did the tunnels. Because if they get in there and actually find something, I bet they don't do that. I bet they say, "Oh, it's way too unstable and it's too dangerous. We can't let people in there." That's what will happen if they find anything.
I'm thinking that that's what they're looking for. They're going to be looking for manuscripts of some sort. I know that the Inca and their method of recording a manuscript is they used to write it upon gold. There was gold paper, I figure it's like a gold sheet that they wrote their information on, and it's there's many of those that they know exist, but they have not been discovered. So this cave, it's very compelling when you think that this archaeologist would seal this cave up after hardly spending any time at all to investigate what was in it, and never broadcasting to the general public what he saw.
Yeah, yeah. The silence is screaming.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, the silence is screaming. This is not going to be just another hole in the ground. There's something about this cave that is important and that is mysterious and interesting,
and it's timely, as you alluded to the Maya calendar. It's all a big coincidence that or I say it's not a coincidence that all of these things are taking place at, you know, in this time. It's just very, it seems to be something that is, you know, kind of meant to be. It's meant to take place at this time. So it'd be very interesting to find out if these archaeologists are not going to be under some kind of duress or something to release information, maybe through some political type pressure to not reveal information. I hope that there's
whatever the pressure was, we don't know what the pressure was, but something kept this archaeologist from publishing what it was he found in the cave. Something caused him to close it back up too.
Very, 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 very mysterious.
It is.
Hey, listen, we've reached the end of the show. If you will, Steve, just stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, if you miss a single second of any Kevin Smith show, you're going to miss a universe, a whole universe of information. And, you know, here, one of our listeners, someone who listens to this show, had information to share with us about something we mentioned on the show. And I want to thank Steve for doing that. It's been most interesting. All right, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. Now you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.